Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work. All right, let's welcome Derek Houck. Yeah! Woo! So glad you're here, Derek. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
So happy to have you on The Work. Let's start off, as we always do, with a little bit about your self-management for actors journey.
I first came into self-management for actors. I have been reading your columns on Actors Access for a while, and I attended the premiere of the Casting About service. They had a party, and you happened to be at it. And that's where I heard about the class, and it's been a part of my career ever since.
Well, because back then would have been, we had an ongoing class going here in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, and it was not called Self-Management for Actors yet. We just informally called it Class Rules.
And how that came about was I had said, well, if I've got anything that I want to feel strict and class-like about, it's that we're going to have these rules, and the rules include, you know, share your toys and solution-oriented feedback and have fun and, you know, just the very typical my kind of rules. And just at the top, it said class rules, because that's what they were. And someone asked me what the class was called, and I was like, sure, class rules, because it does. And that just stuck. I don't know why.
Naming by default works.
Right. So we were meeting months and months, right? You were ongoing for quite some time.
Yeah, it there was an initial period of just getting through the concepts and trying to apply them to my career, and then really ironing out what my type was, what agents and managers I should be targeting, and then actually following through with it. And it was helpful to have the reinforcement and the support of the community as I was doing all that, so that they actually, you know, took me to task and made sure I actually did everything.
That community means everything to me, just to have that that support network and that encouragement for your navigation from tier to tier. Let's talk a little bit about that. If you want to go back before your self-management for actors journey began, to sort of how you got into all of this, and then take us through some of your wins and things that you're excited about.
Yeah, I came here in January of 2003 from Kansas City, Missouri. Pretty much straight out of high school. I took a semester of general education credits so that when I graduated from the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, I could have an associate's of arts degree. And that was kind of the compromise I made with my family to go to acting school. I would have some kind of degree when I got out. So that lasted until 2005. Then I just started auditioning for things and started off with a lot of theater and then a lot of independent stuff, and got in on web series before they really hit big, which was very helpful and exciting. I got to work with green screen before that was a thing everyone was doing. I got to work a little bit with motion capture before that was in every single action movie. And due to self-management for actors, I was able to get some of my first TV co-star credits. So I've experienced several significant tier jumps, and the self-management for actors work has definitely helped in that.
Yeah, I definitely want everyone to know how it is that you say, wow, that booking those first co-stars absolutely has something to do with your self-management for actors journey, because I'm sure there are people who've picked up the book and go, okay, wait, where's mine? So I want to be able to talk a little bit about the difference between having the practical knowledge and putting in the work. But before we do that, you said something that I actually had to write down because I was so intrigued by it, that you got into web series before they were really a thing. How did you know that there was going to be a benefit to being involved with something that at the time was considered, oh, whatever, that thing that people are putting up on YouTube, that's never going to be real? Like, how did you feel early on that maybe it was?
The first web series I was a part of, I had submitted through, I think, Actors Access. And it was more just auditioning for a part. I have no idea what they called it on the breakdown back then, because this was before web series was coined. Their company was actually called webserials.com, and I believe the company still exists, because they were trying to create a name for this thing that they had created. And it was a sci-fi action adventure called Cataclysmo and the Time Boys. And it just allowed me to be a part of a low budget sci-fi project, which I found intriguing. And being able to see it online was such a novelty at the time. I don't know if it was before YouTube. It was certainly in the first few years, and we weren't on YouTube. But they knew what they were doing. They had a lot of Biola University money, so they were able to do things that no one else could really do at the time.
And so then take us through how you started getting network co-stars and how you made that to your job.
My first network co-star, actually the story I should be telling is how I got my manager. And that was a target on my self-management for actors targeted agents and managers list. And her name is Eileen O'Farrell. And she came up as someone who had booked co-stars for a bunch of shows that I was targeting. And I brought her name up in the class rules setting. And someone, it might have been you, might not have, mentioned that she played Words with Friends, which I don't know if that game's still around, but it was a Facebook game.
Oh, yeah.
One of the first big Facebook games. And I was on it. I was playing you on it and several other people in class, and was able to make a friend request to her, play a few games with her on it. And through that, we became Facebook friends. And after a couple of months, she shared something I had posted about the industry. She had reshared it on her own wall. And I took that as a sign that, okay, she actually, you know, looks at what I post. She seems to like it. Maybe that's a good idea that I should submit to her now. And that led to a meeting, that led to representation, and that led to me getting auditions for Love That Girl, Community, Marry Me, and it is that led to my tier jump to the co-star level.
So Derek, let's back up on this. How many weeks, months, years are we talking between that initial, I'm targeting her, here's a way to connect with her, or her organically, let's lay the groundwork, to the now I'm going to submit and get a meeting?
I want to say about like a 3 to 6 month timeline of finding her on social media, reaching out to her, playing games through Facebook, and then the share that she reshared to the meeting to representation.
And do you recommend that kind of, I don't want to call that a strategy because it is so organic.
The strategy I took from it was go where people are and try and build an authentic relationship with them. I mean, obviously I was targeting her and wanted her to be my manager, but I did genuinely engage with her through Words with Friends and play games with the intent to win. Relationships are everything in this business, and people can spot if you're just trying to use them or not.
Absolutely true. Well, it's funny because I remember back in that era of the Zynga games hitting all of Facebook, and there was like
World
Twist, like all of these, and a bunch of us. Yeah. And a bunch of us were like into this at the time. I mean, I still play Words with Friends, but I remember back when I still had a Facebook account, seeing that someone had posted a screen grab of having completely clobbered Bruce Newberg in one of these word games. And Bruce, I can't beat Bruce. Or I say can't. This was 10 years ago. Like, whatever. So, yeah, this is definitely a long, yeah. This is when we're talking 2007, maybe 2008. It's like he's really fierce. And it was so funny because I remember seeing actors comment on this actor having bragged about beating him. And they were like, that's bold, man, challenging a casting director and beating the pants off of him like that and then putting it on your wall. And he's like, I play to win. It's not about like, oh, I'm going to kiss your butt because maybe you do something for me someday. And I thought that's actually really smart because I don't think I would want to play with somebody that was, you know, going soft just because they're like, oh, well, maybe she's got something in it for me. So to really come at that manager and be like, this is a game that you enjoy, I enjoy, let's play. And having that common interest then turn into enough interest that she's paying attention to what you post. And I think that's the key because a lot of people think they have to tweet at somebody, they have to tag people in Instagram posts now or YouTube videos or whatever. They're just constantly pelting people with their stuff rather than going, I'm just going to put it out there and I'm on your radar. Is it hard to have that sense of trust?
It's the difference between posting on someone's Facebook wall your resume or, you know, asking a question at a casting workshop, what do I need to do to get hired by you, versus engaging with them, congratulating them when they get nominated for an Emmy, or asking them an honest question about what it's like to work at their show during a workshop. It's asking genuine interaction with somebody as opposed to self-serving.
Yeah. And I mean, that's long haul though. I like that. And I mean, you still are in a great relationship with your team to this day. Everything is next year,
yeah,
next year, next year.
Unfortunately, I got unemployed last year and had to take a little break from my team, but I made sure to leave them on a very good note and with the possibility to come back to them at a later date. With everything in the business, it's best just to conduct yourself with integrity and honesty, because I fully intend to be involved with this business for the next 30, 40 years. A teacher at AADA told me that I would have a wonderful career at age 50. And I said, great, what do I do until then? And the answer I came up with was build relationships.
Well, and I like that this really takes us to the thing I always say, which is, you know, no one's retiring tomorrow. And I think so many actors, especially at the beginning of their game, especially if they're new to Hollywood, they get short-sighted about results and trying to make things happen so quickly rather than thinking, no, it's relationship building for decades. And I love that you've continued to have a good relationship with the team that was such a big part of things, that you know will come back around. And whether it's that we ever sign up again, it's that we've got a good relationship. And that's being good people and wanting to work with
fellow good people,
right?
Yeah, I plan to be acting when I'm 80. And so there are people I hope will still be in the business then, and I want to work with them.
So take us through some of the things that you are continuing to do that are a little forward moving, because I definitely want you to talk about a series that you created that I know very well. If you would take us through the Napoleon Bon Appetit experience, especially because it's having new life.
Yes.
If I understand correctly.
So Napoleon Bon Appetit was originally created through the urging of members of the Self-Management for Actors community, because there was a big push. This was back in 2010. When people were really starting to self-produce their web series. And within the Self-Management for Actors community, that was a big push to, this is something you can control in your career, and this is something where you can market yourself. And my friend Catherine and I decided to take that idea and run with it. It started as a pun between her dad and her, just trying to think up of roles that I could play. And Napoleon came out, and Bon Appetit to pun off of Bonaparte, and suddenly Napoleon has a cooking show. But We were able to make
it's
it.
So great.
We were able to make the first season for, I believe, $1,500. It was 7 episodes, shot over one weekend, which I don't recommend.
That's
yes,
a really lean budget.
Called in lots of favors. And it helped that the entire series was set in the kitchen, so we didn't have to do multiple locations. And we only, for the most part, that first season we had two guest stars, I believe. And other than that, it was just Catherine and me. So it was a very lean set. And that was the essence of self-producing, is you take what you have, which is not much, but you make it work. And we released the first season on somebody's basement, which was a great place to release a web series at the time, because we were able to get it on IMDb because of that. And then we were.
And this was at a time when web series were not getting put up on IMDb like they are today. It was a battle for a lot of people to create something, especially on that level budget, and get IMDb to pay attention to it at all. And that was one of our purposes behind creating this distribution entity called Somebody's Basement, was we want it to look lo-fi. We want this to be stuff that you produced in somebody's basement, but we want it to be legit. We want it to be like first generation Saturday Night Live. It's still very much a viable platform for people who are creating their own content. And I am so grateful to you for having been a part of that.
Because we didn't produce it in somebody's basement, but we did produce it in somebody's kitchen. And we came back for the second season. We were able to move the episode count up 1 to 8. We decided to be a little bit more sane and filmed it over 2 weekends. And we were able to get a lot more of our friends in as guest stars, including... we got Kimberly Lehmans, who at the time was just off of America's Next Top Model, and she's gone on to do The Walking Dead, and she's about to just blow up. So that was amazing to get someone at the start of their career as a favor, and it's helped us ever since. And being on IMDb that early was... Being on IMDb that early was a nice little foreshadow, because Amazon is helping us with the next stage of the show now.
Share a little bit about that, because that's
pretty
exciting. Yeah,
so earlier this year, Amazon announced that they were opening up Amazon Video to pretty much anyone who was willing to try to get it on there. They called the service Amazon Video Direct. And there was a lot of hubbub in the self-management for actors community about how this would change everything. And I wanted to give it a try. We had a great asset in Napoleon Bon Appetit, and I wanted to get in front of as many people as possible. So it was a pretty easy process. I was able to do everything through my current Amazon account. And I had to create some new art for it. And the most important piece that I had to create, in addition to what we already have for the series, was captions. Amazon requires English captions for all videos released in the U.S. So we had to submit our videos to a captioning service. I believe we used Rev, and they were able to do...
Yeah.
I think they said like 24 to 48 hour business day turnaround. I remember submitting it on like a Friday evening and getting the captions by midday Saturday. So they're really good and very quick turnaround, and the results were wonderful and hilarious, because a lot of it is like yelling and screaming and chopping, and It's nice to watch a physical comedy in word form. So we were able to upload the captions to Amazon Video Direct, add all the information for the episodes, and now both seasons are live and can be streamed on Amazon Prime. The episodes can be bought on Amazon Video, and we even have a little season pack to get the full episodes for both seasons.
And what, from a business perspective, what does this look like for you, distribution wise? Like, are you get a cut? What, how is this
the way it works is
out?
Amazon pays you per minute streamed, and it's not a lot of money. We're looking at less than a cent per minute, but compared to YouTube and some of the other online advertising platforms that Napoleon Bonaparte has been on, I'm already seeing earnings show up on the dashboard with Amazon, and I have not gotten a cent from anywhere else.
Of course. Yeah, because it takes forever to be able to see any of that come back around. And so with Amazon already starting in the game so much far ahead of everybody else, in this world of the streaming, yeah, of course, like just the eyeballs that are there, you have to be, those pennies have to be adding up pretty quickly. Or
absolutely. And just being
enough.
Able to search for Napoleon Bonaparte on Amazon.com and have our show show up is amazing. It's the biggest online marketplace in the world. It's the great, aside from Netflix, I can't think of another destination I would want to have the show on.
And so does this, that's actually a really good point you just brought up with Netflix. Does having this deal with Amazon exclude you from being able to pursue things like a Netflix or a Hulu? Let's talk contracts. I mean, cause that's a big part of self-management for actors is knowing what you're signing on for. Do you have like an exclusivity deal?
No, with Amazon, it's a pretty common, rights deal. They want a non-exclusive right to distribute the episodes as long as it's on your service and, you know, worldwide, and be able to edit them and put them in promos and all the stuff that they would want to do with something that turns out to draw eyeballs. But it's non-exclusive and shouldn't get in the way of any of our video distribution deals. Obviously, with someone like Netflix, they may want exclusivity. So that is something to keep in mind. But for a show like Napoleon Bonaparte, it's already been available on the web for years. There's not much risk in signing on with Amazon.
And is there any potential upside in something like when original programming is being discussed for the next season's slate at Amazon? Can you get a seat at the table? Can you pitch? Is this something where you're possibly being looked at as a content creator going forward?
From what I can see, this is a completely separate service that is just so it can. I think the main reason they're doing this is just to flood Prime with content. They want to build up their catalog because Netflix has the numbers right now. And so this is their way to get in people that wouldn't be in their ecosystem otherwise.
Talk to me real quick about how you balance being a creative on camera, and especially in something where you created the series and produced it, being behind the scenes and on camera. What's the balance for that level?
My rule
of creative
energy? For all self-produced content that I make, I do not direct and I do not edit it, because for one thing, I would get overwhelmed and I don't want to be behind the camera, directing myself on the camera. I want to be able to focus on one thing at a time. Before it shoots, I want to be the producer, getting everything ready. When it shoots, I want to be the actor, focusing on my character. And after it shoots, I want to focus on the marketing. Excuse me. Having a Mark Rubio moment.
Yeah.
But also having a separate director, having a separate editor, it gives another set of eyeballs on my work. And more ideas. It just makes the show, the short, better. With Napoleon, we had jokes come up from the director, the editor, the other actors that I would never have thought of and made the series a lot funnier. And then I get to take credit for it because I wrote the script. I don't believe that I have the single authentic vision of any project that I'm in. Mm. I enjoy collaboration and getting a perspective that's not my own.
Tell me what's next for you. What are you creating?
I've got a short that we shot in January, again on no budget, with a lot of favors, called You Slept With My Girlfriend. And it's cute. Just two guys, one manipulating the other, shot in an apartment. And we're working on trying to get the edit done for that and then hopefully marching that on to the festivals. The short I had going around the festivals last year, Superfan, it's completed its festival circuit. And now I'm having to decide what to do with it, whether I will put it on Amazon or try and get it on a short specific channel. So that's what I'm looking at right now for that. And I'm also making an app.
Tell us about the app. Yes. Oh my gosh. I've been seeing little bits and pieces about this over time.
Yeah, so this is my second attempt at an app for actors. The first time around, I tried to create an app called Type Me Please that would show a headshot and ask people to put adjectives of what they think that headshot represented, whether it was geeky, what kind of age ranges the headshot could play. And it was a very nice interface, but its usefulness was limited. And so this time around, I'm creating an app called My Hero Headshot, which is basically a flip of that. The user selects three headshots and an adjective. And then the visitors try and pick the headshot that best represents that adjective. So you've got, three headshots of me, and then the adjective geeky, and try and figure out which one really just hones in on the geekiness.
So this one's more for actors who already have a sense of a dominant typing word, not I have no clue, please label me. This really is coming from a place of, I already know I'm going out for the jock or the
yeah,
mom.
Yeah, so this
or
is
whatever.
People who already know their type. And just want their headshots to convey that type.
And what's your timeline for this being available and how can listeners find out more about it?
I'm creating this in Ruby on Rails, which this is my first Rails app. So it's been quite a learning experience, but it works. I've got all the code for the actual functionality down, and it works on my local server, and it works in the little deployment server. Now I have to make it look pretty. So a lot of it's going to be building the site around it now, and I'm going to reach out to a designer to try and get a visual look for it. So looking to launch it here probably in the next 3 to 6 months.
So before the end of 2016, people can expect to hopefully see this at like the iTunes store.
Well,
Android,
this would be a web app because I like, just having web URLs app. People can share on Facebook, Twitter. I want something that everyone can visit no matter what their phone, because the only way to get useful feedback is to get as many people to respond to it as possible. And so a URL is much easier to do that with than trying to share an app with somebody.
So true. I remember we were looking to design an app in around 2011. And I remember sitting down with the Casting About guys to loop back around to how you and I initially first met. The Casting About guys said the only people who get rich in app development are the app developers. You need to just have a really slick, mobile friendly website so people will visit it on their gadgets. And, this is a 2011 conversation. And of course, today there's, no reason to have a website that doesn't play nice on a gadget. I mean, you
absolutely
pretty much can't.
And even at this point, beyond apps, your actor website should be mobile friendly as well, because most casting directors are going to pull it up in the room on their phone.
So true. I remember the first time I pulled up the our casting wiki during auditions and started taking notes on my iPad. during auditions. And it was so funny because there was an actor who said, you know, you're like over there texting during my audition. It's kind of rude. And I'm like, no, I'm editing the wiki. This is the database of everyone I know. And I'm making notes about your auditions in this platform. Like, this is the future. And you're like, no.
I learned long ago to not take it personally when I'm in an audition and someone has their head down at their phone, at their notepad, at whatever they're looking at, because I assume they're paying attention and that they're taking notes, and that if they're engaged enough to be taking notes, then I'm doing something right.
Amen. I love that. Yeah. Because what if what I'm doing when my head is down is saying, oh my God, must cast immediately, get to the head of network tomorrow. Like, oh, you know, exactly. You want me writing that, not just giving you eye contact. Derek, where can people find you? Are you social media kind of guy? Do you like connection from people that are maybe hearing this podcast and want to check out more of what you've got?
My hub on the internet is derekhauck.com, DerekHouck. And I am Derek Houck on Twitter and on Facebook, all one word, lowercase. I try and just plant my Derek Houck flag on any service I can find.
It's smart. And your name's unique enough that I'm sure you can be first. You just have to be aware of what you were the one who told me about, what was it? Dysphoria?
It was for a while. It didn't really hang around that much. Yeah.
Because I remember you're like, Bonnie, you're going to want to do this. And I was like, okay, if you say so, Derek, I'm following you. And then it's like,
occasionally my picker is not that good, but
no, but you still got to go. You got to go and be first because you don't know if it's going to be a thing or not. And so it's smart to just go and grab your spot for it. Like I did with, you know, Periscope and I was so late to the Instagram party because I was like, no, I already have Flickr. Why do I need Instagram? I'm like, oh, now I see why. Yeah, probably could have stood to get that. Anyway, what parting tips would you have for anybody listening who is hoping to have a hyphenate lifestyle and have a lot of fun along the way?
One thing, as well as we're on websites, is I create subdomains for IMDb, Facebook, Twitter, so I don't have to share all their weird addresses. I can just say twitter.derekhauck.com, imdb.derekhauck.com, and that's something you can set up through your web host. And it should be a pretty simple redirect.
And that's what we have actually for... Yeah. For this podcast, we do BonnieGillespie.com/podcast, but we could just as easily do podcast.BonnieGillespie.com, and it redirects to that big, long iTunes URL.
Absolutely. So and smart. As long as you have a convention, whether it is the subdomain or whether it's the subdirectory, as long as you maintain that, then it's very easy for people to find you, and it looks slick on the business card.
I like that. It looks good on a business card, easy to say aloud, you know, because once you're going /this-that and all the whatever gobbledygook that comes after, even if it has a place where you can do a vanity URL like IMDb, a lot of times people will get that wrong and they'll say imdb.com/their vanity name. And it's not, it's imdb.me/the vanity name. And they get, and it turned around.
It helps for even just one-off URLs. For many years, hosted a Dodger game for the Self-Management for Actors community. And one of the things I did one year when I was trying to collect names and email addresses was do dodgers.derekhauck.com, just because it's a lot easier than sharing like a bit.ly URL, because it's something people can actually pronounce.
That's true. It's very true. Very smart. And it keeps your branding present.
Absolutely.
Whereas bit.ly and tiny URL, it's not about you, but Derek Houck is always going to be about you.
I like having control over things.
Excellent. Derek, you're fantastic. Thank you for sharing this time with me.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
This has been a blast, and hooray. I cannot wait to see what happens next with all your ventures and the new technology ahead.
Viva Napoleon, bon appetit.
Indeed. What would be the right thing to say? Oui, oui.
Ask someone who knows French better than I do.
I don't know. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.